offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the U of I Center for Advanced Study, whose MillerCom 2006 lecture series presents From Troy to Baghdad, Can the U.S. Military Learn from Homer's Epics? By Jonathan Shea on Thursday, November 17th at 4 p.m. at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. For more information, go to www.cas.uiuc.edu.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program this afternoon, our monthly show about computers. We take up this topic each month on the third Thursday of the month. We call it Computers and You. This afternoon, I invite your questions about computers for Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and lead faculty trainer for the university's technology consortium, FAST 3. If you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, give us a call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. W-I-L-L. Welcome back. Good to see you.
It's always nice to be here. Thank you.
Would you begin with us this afternoon by talking a little bit about the uproar involving Sony BMG CDs, and where do things stand now?
Well, this is something that has really blown up in the last couple of weeks. It all starts with Sony's, and other companies as well, but in particular Sony's effort to prevent illegal copying of audio CDs. It ties into what's called digital rights management, and certainly the content provider, Sony or whomever, has the right to control whether you can make copies or not. And so they've tried to enforce that in a number of ways. But with about 20 of their CD titles, they started releasing them with a bit of software that will install itself when you put the CD into a computer. Now, this doesn't happen if you're putting the CD into a standard CD player or in a car CD player or something, but if you want to play it on the computer or bring the files into MP3 format or something like that, when you put the CD into the computer, instead of the music coming up, a agreement comes up, says you need to install this software to be able to play these CDs. If you accept that agreement, and if you don't, most software that play CDs won't recognize the CD. It gets confused, and that's part of what Sony did. If you accept it, then a bit of software is installed that sits in the background and keeps track of what you're doing, and it will only allow you to make three copies, for example, of the CD. It prevents making unprotected MP3s. But so people couldn't remove this, what Sony did is they used some technology that is kind of a cryptic-sounding term. It's called rootkit technology, which actually makes fundamental changes at the level of the Windows operating system to hide these files that it installed from Windows itself. So they're sitting there, they can't be removed, that you can't even see them unless you're a fairly sophisticated user. There's no uninstall program, and it was written poorly enough so that not only will this hide its own files, but also any file that starts with a particular name, and it wasn't long until the virus and remote Trojan writers caught on to that and started, and there are a number of them out in the wild now, writing viruses and other malicious software that use the Sony software to hide themselves. And so you've got a whole bunch of various problems.
Yeah. So how do you know? I mean, how can you get rid of this now? And what's Sony doing about it? Because this hasn't been good for Sony.
No, it hasn't. It's been a real
nightmare.
Quite
embarrassed.
It's a nightmare for Sony. They thought at first it would blow over. They didn't think too many people would be concerned, but it was picked up because this software sits there and is using CPU cycles, slowing down your computer a little bit, just like all sorts of other malicious software. So they initially said, well, we can uncloak that so you can then sort of remove it yourself. And they had a website, but you had to fill in a form and put in your name and an email address and what was the CD you had. And then as a result of that, they would send you information about how to not remove it but to make it visible, which solved one of the problems. But unfortunately, one of their update programs to remove this was itself flawed, perhaps even more fatally, in that it put a bit of software on it to remove their copy protection software, which was good, but the software that it did to do that took its instructions from the website, from Sony's website, which is okay, but then it left itself with authorized access to your system so that instructions from anybody's website could then be executed. So that only lasted on Sony's site for about a day or two until people said, you know, this is worse, this cure is worse than the disease. Currently, their website says we'll have a way of removing this before long. Sony has said we will recall all unsold CDs, and there are about 2 million CDs using this, about 20 different titles. Some estimates that maybe 500,000 people have installed this software. Mm-hmm. And they will be announcing on their site a way for people to exchange their CDs with this heavy-handed copy protection for CDs that use some other kind of copy protection that's not nearly as much of a problem. You can read about a lot of this if people are concerned about what they've got. They can go to the Sony BMG site. It's just www.sonybmg.com. And it didn't used to say anything about this, but now because of all the publicity, there's a little link at the bottom of the page where you can go to frequently asked questions and such. Sony still does not say which CD titles have the software. If you look at it very closely, you can see that the outside of the CD talks about this has got copy protection, and you can tell which kind it is in case it says XCP someplace. It's kind of cryptic, but a search on the web for Sony and rootkit, one word, but it's just like it sounds, working at the root, and it's a kit of software to do it, rootkit will get you all sorts of sites, and one of them is the site that is maintained by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is an advocacy group for free and open exchange of information over the Internet. And they've actually put together a list of the 20 or so CD titles that they have found from Sony BMG that have this software on it. Okay. And it runs the gamut. I mean, it's not just one particular genre of music. One could almost suggest, although it wouldn't really be that funny, that, gee, if it was only this kind of music that I don't like, then fine, you know, serves them right. But that's not what it is. It's all the way across.
Okay, and also that there's a link on our webpage on the Afternoon Magazine page for today to the Electronic
Frontier Foundation.
So,
and that has, and from there you can explore and get to all other sorts of locations. Yeah. But it'll pretty much tell you what to do. And keep an eye on the Sony BMG site for those who think they have this installed. And if anybody has tried to uninstall it, which requires a certain amount of awareness, because you had to know that this was a problem, been reading about it, go to the Sony site while they still had their flawed uninstall there. There's even some links that you'll find maybe two or three away from that EFF site that will test whether they have left the dangerous open door as a result of their first uninstall effort.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Peter Kimball, our guest this afternoon here on the program we call Computers and You, the topic of computers we take up each month on the third Thursday of the month. Listeners, you can join us with your questions, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our first caller this afternoon waits for us on line 2 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Please turn my radio down here. Okay. I'm using a Foxfire.
Yes. Or Firefox.
Yeah, Firefox. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think Foxfire was a movie or something.
Yeah. Wait, I'm having trouble. I have antivirus McGrath or AFRI. And,
yeah.
He wants to update my virus protection, and when I go into their website and want to update, I don't think the Firefox is letting me get to that page. It just freezes up on me. Is there a security thing that the browser is using to keep me from downloading?
There may be, although I'm a little surprised. Now, I can't because I don't have Firefox on this machine that I've got in front of me. There certainly can be tools and settings that prevent a program from wanting to download Now, if you have McAfee, the virus protection software, one way that you might be able to avoid having to go through a browser to download it would be, if it's the standard virus scan, there is in your start, and you are, no, let me back up, you're using Firefox and using it on a Windows machine?
Yeah.
Okay. And so if you actually go to the start menu programs and bring up something probably called like the virus scan console, it's maybe under Network Associates, under McAfee, something of that sort, and actually bring the console up, and there is a link to update from there, which is simply run within the McAfee software, and that's presumably, to my knowledge, going to avoid going through a browser so that you can just update directly.
Yeah, it used to do that, and now it all of a sudden stopped doing that.
It
brings my Firefox up, and I'm like, it used to just update it all the time on its own. It's the security center you're thinking of when you are referring to that. And now it always brings the browser up, and I'm like, I don't understand why it's not updating, you know. And I was wondering if I was looking for it on the browser, I look in the tools and the settings.
Well, yes. One other place you might look for it, quite possibly in your system tray, which is over on the right-hand side of the start and menu bar down there, where you've got the clock and such. Do you see a little icon for, it's typically if it's a virus scan, it's like a little shield with a V in it.
Right, yeah.
If you right-click on that, and a little context menu will pop up, and generally what you'll have will be a choice there. Again, it depends on which version you've got, but a choice will pop up for virus scan console, or words to that effect. Bring that up. That should actually bring up the console. You'll then see things, again, slight differences, but you'll see a number of things that the virus scan from McAfee is doing, and one of them is auto-update, and you can right-click on that and say start it, and you can actually manually start it from there.
Okay. Well,
so I would try that.
Okay. Thanks for the call and good luck. And we're going to talk next with a caller on line 4. Good afternoon.
Is that Chicago?
That's you.
Okay. Thank
Hi.
You. I'm using XP.
Yes.
SP2.
Okay. That's good.
And I each time I open a Word office document, whether it's Word or Excel, I get a message that says the document is being used by, and then it has my name. Do you want to make a copy?
Oh, and this is even if you don't have anything previously open.
Yeah. Anytime I try to access a previously existing document. You know, when I just open Word, it doesn't say that.
Okay.
It's a clean document, a new document.
Right. Does this happen when's the last time you restarted your machine?
Oh, just a few minutes before I called.
So
it
you restart the machine, so absolutely nothing has happened. You launch Word or Excel for the first time since you started the machine. Specify an existing document, and then it says that you've already got it open. Do you want to make a copy? Is that
correct? It says it's being used by, and then it has my name. Do you want to make a copy? And this it might help if I add this. I also, each time I start up, I get a screen that's sort of like an XP welcome screen that says how many messages are unread. And which programs are running. And then, of course, I click on my name and go from there.
So this is coming up in, now if it's how many messages you've got, so is this bringing up Microsoft Outlook then when you first start up? Is that what's...
Well, I use Firefox also.
Okay. Well, Outlook is a email, Outlook or Outlook Express is an email reading program, so it's not really...
Yeah, I don't use Outlook Express or Outlook.
It sounds like then what may be coming up is Firefox starting? Do you have Firefox set to start automatically when you get up?
No.
What I'm wondering
is
which program is giving you this message when you start up?
Well, it's sort of that XP welcome screen. You know, where it has the name of the computer.
You know,
when you install, you have to name the computer. And then it has my name up there. And next to my name, it says there are so many messages on red and
okay.
And programs. Then I click on my name, and it goes into, you know, what I presume is my profile. It loads the programs that I usually use, like Gmail and that sort of thing. And then I'm off and running.
Well, this is an interesting combination of events, and I'm not entirely sure I've got a good answer in the time we've got. Since it happens when you first start up the machine, then that clearly means that something that is starting, one of the things you can try to do is take a look on your start menu under programs. And there should be there, although you might have to expand it a little bit, depending upon how you're displaying them, there is a category called Startup. And under Startup, you can see whatever it's attempting to start for you. And if it's listing something like Microsoft Office or something else, you can simply drag that away from the Startup menu, and it won't start automatically. And that may be, that's where I would start.
Okay.
I would start by looking to see what is starting up, because something is starting, opening those files or tagging them as being opened. And you say it's any file at all.
Word
in Excel files. But it doesn't matter if it's one you haven't used for a year. It is still telling you that it's in use, and would you like to make a copy?
Right.
I don't have a good answer for you at this point. I will have to look into that.
Maybe suggest an answer. I don't know how to do
sure.
it. But I'm the only person who uses the computer, so I haven't really, as far as I know, when I first installed XP, I didn't designate.
Okay, so what we may have is actually the quick start and the file sharing. Now, when you start it up, this is actually another question, since you've got... Since you're set up that way, when you shut it down, are you just very quickly going and restarting what's called fast user switching, or is it actually going all the way through the boot sequence, all the way back down to now starting up, now starting Windows, etc.?
I'm not sure I can answer that.
What I would try to do is when you shut it down, try at one point just choosing. Under the Start menu, or when you press Control-Alt-Delete, however you want to get to it, shut down, and change the option all the way to shut down, so it just shuts the entire machine down. That way you're sure that everything is off and undone.
Right.
And then start it up, by hitting the power button and such.
Right.
And what you want to turn off is what's called fast user switching, and the way in which people log on to the computer, and you can probably find that. It really depends upon... On the permissions that you have, but you're probably as an administrator. I don't have that on this particular machine, but if you can go into Settings, Control Panel, Computer Management, and you should be able to change at some point, and I'd tell you where if I could bring it up here, the way in which you log on, and you can turn off this fast user switching so mm-hmm. that you will no longer have that nice little panel of, with the names and how many messages you've got. You'll simply
right.
all the time be presented with a... give your login name and password screen. And I do that often enough that you'd think I could remember exactly how to do it, but I do it by sitting down and finding it right there, and I don't have administrative access to the machine that I have sitting here in front of me now, so I can't give you those details. But that's what you want to turn off. You want to turn off fast. It's also sometimes described as change the way in which users log in and then turn off fast user switching. And that's going to be under the control panel, but I don't have access to
right.
it at this point.
Okay.
But that's and I think that could well solve the problem, because the fast user switching is a way of not really closing all programs and moving from one user to another
mm-hmm.
And then moving back without having to shut things down. And that certainly could leave the programs like Word and Excel and others, which handle that very elegantly, saying, wait a minute, I'm already open. I've got this thing open. There could well be some confusion as a result. So, yes, turn off fast user switching. Change the way you, quote-unquote, users log on to the machine.
And I access that through the control panel?
That is, yes. That is someplace in the control panel.
Great. Well, I hope it works, and I hope I can get back to you if it doesn't.
Yes, that would be fine, although I might have to look this up, and I'll make a point the next time I come back, which will be in January, although Greg Klein will be here next month, and we will probably know from this call to double-check so we can remember, even when we don't have it in front of us, exactly how to get there.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Love the show.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's talk with another listener now. Caller on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I'm going to have a new computing situation. I've always just used a single laptop, and I was running Windows 98 second edition up until a couple weeks ago. Now I'm vaulting into the new age, and I'm going to have a Beater XP desktop with an enormous couple hard drives that I want to use as a repository, and a kind of sports car wireless Dick Tracy computer, a laptop, that I'll be taking around. The strategy that I'm interested to hear you comment on is, shall I call it, a food taster defense. I'd like to do all my internet activity on that sports car, on that laptop, and never, ever allow the desktop to go directly online. And only, say, once a week transfer essential things between the laptop and the desktop after a very thorough scan of the laptop with the antivirus that's updated. Does that sound like a reasonable thing, or is that just a lot of trouble for nothing?
Well, I wouldn't say it's trouble for nothing. It's probably more trouble than you really need to go to, although it's certainly admirable to try to keep the large data repository machine pristine, assuming if it doesn't go out in the world, it's not going to be corrupted by the world, of course. Since you're going to be going wireless with the laptop, you're going to be having a wireless router. So your connection into your internet connection is coming in. Do you have are you going to be having a broadband, like a cable or a DSL line connection or a dial-up, or how are you going to be connecting to the internet?
I'll have wireless DSL modem router.
Okay. So you're out and not in an urban area if you're going wireless DSL, right? Presumably.
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing at home.
I mean,
you can go to the coffee shop and get on, obviously.
Okay. But so you're going to have a DSL, wireless DSL connection. That connection is going to come into your home from the modem, and since you now want to be able to use multiple machines and have them communicate with each other, what you're going to need is a piece of hardware, or the best way of doing this is a little piece of hardware called a router. They're like Linksys, and many other companies make them, and they're any place depending on the degree of flexibility you want, from $40 to $50 to $60. And what they do is your incoming internet connection plugs into this thing, and then you can either directly plug other machines into it with a standard network cable, but it's also wireless so that it can act as the access point. So when you're roaming around the house with your laptop, you can connect directly to it. Those are all then combined and sent out on your one internet connection. So though you're not going to be doing this, you could conceivably have two or three people using the internet at the same time with your one connection, because it's all concatenated and brought together by this router. Having done that, assuming that you're going with this what's called a wireless access point or a wireless router, and you set up the very basic security on it, then that's actually acting as a firewall, sort of a hardware firewall that's going to prevent people from probing malicious software and machines outside in the internet that have been corrupted and are spending all their time looking for other machines to corrupt. It's going to prevent them from seeing your machines, because they are just going to see this router and they're not going to be able to see past it. If that's your situation, then you're relatively safe. You can use that connection to very easily communicate files from your laptop to the XP machine that's going to be your data storage machine. You don't ever need to use the large desktop machine to go out onto the internet, although you'd be relatively safe in doing so. Again, making the assumption that any machine is going to have its own virus software installed on it. And I'm not sure if this is along the lines of where you're going or not. Does this help?
Yes, it does. I guess I'll just follow up and say I had thought of doing all the things that you said, and it strikes me at that point then that in terms of defense, one is putting all one's eggs in the firewall's basket. Firewall fails, you're down for the count. Is that correct?
Well, except in this case, since this is a hardware firewall, if it fails, if it ceases working, then you don't have a connection to the internet because it's like this thing has gone dead, and so yes, you've got no firewall, but you also have no internet connection. It's not going to fail. It would be almost inconceivably unlikely for the firewall. In fact, it's not possible for the firewall portion or what is acting as a firewall, because the machines that you have on your local safe side, on your home side of this router, have their own individual addresses that only their internet addresses that only really mean things to other machines on your side of the network. That's all then combined into a external address, which is what is coming into your house. And so if that fails, then there's no way for your machines to communicate outside.
I see.
Or for things to come back in. So that's actually, all things considered, going to be safer for these kinds of probing assaults than a software firewall. Now, software firewalls have their place. If for some reason you do have a program that is malicious or that is a Trojan that is doing things that it wasn't really advertised as doing, the hardware device is not going to prevent those from going out to the internet and calling home and doing other things. It's simply going to prevent the unwanted probes and such from coming into your machine. But with the hardware, even with a hardware firewall, it would be possible if you wanted to go out to the internet and went to a site and you did not have up-to-date virus protection software for you to become infected. The firewall is not going to be able to babysit you to that extent.
I didn't go out and buy a separate router when I signed up with SBC to get the DSL, and they sent me a wireless modem router. Now, does that one?
That should probably do the job. I'm not. So you've got the line coming in from SBC. It plugs into this thing. There's probably a place that you can plug in one or two individual
45 jacks. Yeah.
Yeah. The computer connections, plus it's got the little antenna so that you can connect to it with your laptop. So yes, that is indeed a router that has the same sort of, it's what's called a wireless access point. You will want to make sure there are some basic security things that I don't know if SBC includes or not. I mean, it's certainly capable, the device you have is capable of doing it, but you want to make sure, for example, that all of the communications that are going wirelessly between your laptop and this device are being encrypted.
Right.
Most devices, when they're shipped, and I don't know about SBCs, to make it easy to set up, don't bother doing encryption, and that means somebody can just kind of pull up outside your house, and probably what they would do would just be to make use of your internet connection.
I've read about that. That's certainly something I can and will set up.
Yeah, so. And that's part of any wireless access point. And that and a couple of other basic steps that I imagine SBC describes, such as not advertising your the name of your wireless router, what's called your SSID, your service identifier, so that people have to know what the name is you've given it to be able to even see it. And once they see it, it's encrypted. That gives you some, for all practical purposes, unless somebody's really trying to break in with sophisticated tools, is going to give you a pretty good protection.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line 2. You're on the air with Peter Kimball. Hi.
Hi. A couple of days ago, I installed a practice demo CD, and now it's interfering with my Outlook email, and I cannot figure out how to uninstall it.
What was the demo practice CD
it's
about?
Called Practice Tabs 3. It's an attorney CD for billing and emails and so on and so forth.
Well, the first thing to see, when you go to the Start menu and you choose Settings and then Control Panel and then Add Remove Programs, Does it list itself? Do you see any kind of a listing in that? This is what you want to check. And if it's a well-behaved program, there should be a listing there that will allow you to remove it. Well-behaved software, when you install it, adds a uninstall command or an uninstall
right.
bit of software. And so that's the first thing that you should do.
Okay.
So again, you just go to the Start menu and choose Settings and Control Panel. And depending on how it's set up, it'll be something on the order of add, remove programs. There are a couple of different ways that control panel can look. Some of them are try to be overly friendly, but there should be a place there that says add, remove programs.
Right, and I'm in that.
Okay. And now it'll when you double click that, it'll probably take a few minutes as it kind of builds up the list of all the things that it thinks it has.
Right, and I don't see it in here.
And now look under a number of different names because it might not be the initial name. Just kind of scroll down and if there's anything you don't recognize that looks like it might be, because sometimes the add remove programs will be under the category of the company's corporate names. So
right.
it might be not the actual name of the software, but like Network Associates version of some kind of software. Or instead of Norton Antivirus, it might be under Symantec or something.
No, I still don't see it. I'm looking.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? There it is.
Ah, good.
I did find it.
And so choose, choose that, remove it, and if it's well written, and it will assume that these guys are, then it will remove it. You'll have the choice of either updating or removing it, and you'll just say, I want to remove it entirely. To be completely safe after that, to make sure the last vestiges are there, it's usually a good idea to just restart the machine.
Wonderful.
And then all of that should be away and no longer in your hair.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
You're very welcome. You made a woman very happy here
yes.
this afternoon. Peter Kimball is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. It's the third Thursday of the month. It's the day we talk about computers. It's a show we call Computers and You. Peter is with the University of Illinois. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, FAST. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, if you've got a question about computers, give us a call. Talk to Peter. He'll help you out. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. WILL. We've got about 10, 12 minutes left in this portion of the program. No one waiting at the moment. Let's go back to the topic of digital rights management.
Yes, or DRM, as
DRM.
They say.
What's the future of this, of content protection technology?
Well, it is going to continue to be enhanced and developed. Sony certainly got a black eye with their somewhat extreme attempt, but it's all tied into the Digital Millennium digital rights software,
mm-hmm.
copyright software that was passed. And so the attempt is going to be made to prevent unauthorized use. This is all the downloading and sharing of songs. The big question is, at what point is the balance going to be drawn? And most would agree that it's certainly fair for content providers and artists to receive due compensation. And so the songs are not free. They don't belong to everybody. But at the same time, there are certain things along the lines that we would mostly describe as fair use. If
mm-hmm.
you buy a CD, you really ought to be able to play it in your computer and in your car. You ought to be able to load it onto your on your portable music device.
Or loan it to you.
Or loan it, yes. And some of the more draconian digital rights management software will not allow that. And it's going to be more true. It's not so much true with audio software now or with audio CDs, but the upcoming super audio CDs, which are going to be much higher in quality, but are going to have much more content control on them as well. And so it's an area that there needs to be due vigilance between the consumer and consumer rights organizations and the producers.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. We're going to go next to Charleston, talk with a caller on line 4. Hi.
Hello. My Internet Explorer, it's got some kind of virus or something, so I've shut off the use of it and have been using Netscape. But certain programs will only allow you to use Explorer. Is there any way to clean it up, I guess you'd say?
Yes, so what you actually probably have may not be a virus, but various add-ons, things that were downloaded and now are being treated as services or as so-called services or other functions within Internet Explorer. There are several things you can try. One is, and you can download these using Netscape or other browsers, you can go and download some of the adware removal programs such as SpyBot or AdAware, because a lot of the extra software that's in there is in that category, and so you can attempt to remove that. And those are free shareware, make a contribution if you wish, but they're in essence free.
That was my next question, how much it costs.
Yeah, those are the basic versions are free. There are professional versions that will do a little bit more, but I would give it a try for the free versions to start with. I presume you've got antivirus software, and you can run that and have it scan your entire system and see what it can find.
Okay, and that was SpyBot, you said?
Yes, it's SpyBot Search and Destroy, and the actual there are several places out there that have similar names that actually install adware and such instead. And I can tell you in just a second here the one that will be appropriate. And it is going to be SpyBot Search and Destroy, and it's what you get at
safer-networking.org. Okay.
And that's SpyBot. And then the other one is something called AdAware, which is located, let me see if I can bring this in, at www.lavasoft.usa, all one word, lava as in from volcanoes, lavasoftusa.com.
All right, thank you very much.
That'd be a good start. And then make sure that you download from, and of course, once you've got Internet Explorer running again, the Windows update, which will update, get the latest security patches. Microsoft has, as part of their update every month, they come out with a new version of this, a malicious software removal tool, which gets rid of some of the nasty stuff.
Okay.
Having said that, I've seen a couple of people who have gotten their machines so thoroughly infected, often when they have kids, you know, doing all sorts of stuff, that there's almost no solution or no practical solution other than saving the files you want, wiping the entire thing, reinstalling the operating system.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't think mine's that bad.
Yeah, that's the nuclear option.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Quite welcome.
Right. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Savoy on line two. Hi.
Hi. I have upgraded my computer to Windows XP.
Yes.
And I'm just telling you so you know what was on it. But I have sort of like it sounds like a zip that comes on every so often. And then it comes up with this little box, and it says, please wait. And it doesn't take but a second, but it'll come up every so often, and I don't know why. Do you know?
And so this is, what else does the box say? You said something about a zip or a...
It makes a sound. It's something like zip, like that.
And the box just says, please wait. Does it have any kind of a title or anything
else? No, it just says, please wait. It's a blue with maybe a white top. Nothing there.
That's not a lot of information to go on. There are several things it could be. For example, some kinds of audio devices and some kinds of software or hardware that you've got installed may require this. I would certainly... make sure that you don't have any malevolent software. The same resources that I just suggested the last person, check for any adware or spyware that's on there. But I don't really, again, I can't say from what you've described exactly what it's going to be.
Well, another thing I've had trouble with, and this might be leading to it, is that I had every so often my screen... Well, if I leave it for like 20 or 30 minutes, I come back up, I click on the mouse, it won't come back on. And I click on it. So I've had to just turn off the computer.
Okay, it sounds like
And then bring it back up.
Yeah. So I would, that sounds like software that is running that maybe should not be running in there. So I would strongly suggest that you run a couple of the, because one doesn't always find everything, of
what?
These.
Windows?
The adware and like the SpyBot software I mentioned to the last caller.
I didn't get it because there was...
Well, one place you can go, because it's a little bit out of date, but one place where I've got both of those listed is if you go to www. And then FAST3, F-A-S-T, and the digit 3.
FAST3.
F-A-S-T, and then just the digit, the number 3, dot UIUC, dot EDU, slash safety. And that's just a really quickly done thing that says make sure you go to Windows Update, make sure you get antivirus software, and number 3, actually at the end of number 3 it says you want to have at least 2 spyware or adware checking programs, and I have links down there to both SpyBot and to Adaware, which are 2 free programs. Check okay. And see, because it sounds like you've got unauthorized software running on your machine.
Well, I did remember seeing it when it comes back on, they're talking about software.
Yeah.
But
so
I'm
that's,
real ignorant about it. So
well, I would do that.
I decided to call.
And you also, I hope, have up-to-date, you've got virus antivirus software installed.
Well, that's
on your
one thing I've tried to get. Oh, another thing, too, if lately my server, which is FPC So Global, I end up trying to send my email, and it comes up. It says, read this little line. And, you know, I'm supposed to put the line in this place, and I don't know what they want me to do. There's a bunch of letters that are shaped different ways, and I can't do that with it.
Well, that sounds like, and there's a place for you to type in a response, that sounds like programs or a feature that a lot of software companies put in place to make sure that you're really a person and not some sort of automatic machine. So they give you something that a machine can't read.
Well, the thing is, I can't read it either because I'm not sure what I'm supposed to read.
Well, in that case, there may well be a link, if depending on this, saying, if you can't read this, click here, and they may give you some other alternative.
Well, somebody suggested I start putting in the caps where they look like caps and they're low where they look like low, but they're kind of shaped differently.
Well, and they're shaped that way to kind of throw off automatic programs.
Oh, okay.
So that's intentional. But okay. Make sure that you have antivirus software, that you run an antivirus scan, allow that software to do it, and then check for the adware and the spyware to make sure that your system is relatively clean. It's
well, thank you.
Good luck.
Okay, bye.
Okay, let's see if we can get one more call in here this afternoon before we have to wrap things up. Line 3, a caller in Odin.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I've got apparently a virus on my machine. My printer was out, so I put some files on a disk and took them to a copy place to get copies made. And when they went to do that, they said, oh, there's a virus. And then since then, the machine will reboot itself. And it gets down to the point where it doesn't get out of the original, very basic-looking screen when it's rebooting, and it reboots on itself again. I'm planning to get a new computer and have kind of came to the antivirus thing late, obviously, but it's running Windows 95, and I can't find any programs that'll run antivirus on Windows 95.
Well, and you may that's going to be a problem because Microsoft doesn't even support Windows 95 anymore.
Okay.
And so that's not surprising. And you might find somebody who has, I don't know where, but you just have to ask around, gee, does anybody still have their antivirus software? But realize that antivirus software for the old version is not going to cover more recent versions, and most of the software antivirus makers aren't even trying to support Windows 95 offerings anymore. So your best bet is to, I hate to say this, but update, if that's a machine that you want to continue using, update it to a more recent version of Windows for which you can get antivirus and other software.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. And that was nicely done.
Yes, it doesn't always work out like this, but it does sometimes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure.
We will see you in the new year.
That's right. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well. Next month, Greg Klein will join us from the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette on the third Thursday of December. And Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois will be back with us on the third Thursday of January. Peter is Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, FAST 3. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, let's find out how things wound up today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. A mixed day on this Thursday afternoon at the Board of Trade. Beans were up in the nearbys, a little lower in the deferred contracts. Corn down about a half to a quarter of a cent for the day for the most part. And the wheat futures taking the biggest hit, down just 2 cents in the nearby December contract. They had a high today of 308, a low at 303 and three quarters. And the Chicago Board of Trade soft red winter wheat settled the day at 304 and three quarters for that December contract. It was off 2 for the day. March contract at 324 high, low at 319 and a quarter. Settlement price at 321. They were a penny and a half lower in the May futures in the wheat pit. 332 and a half on the high. The low at 328 and three quarters. Settlement price at $3.30 and a half cents off 1. In July futures, 339 and a half high. Low at 336 and three quarters. A settlement there at $3.38 and a quarter. They were down a penny and a quarter for the day. September futures, 346 and a half the high. The low at 45. Settlement price at $3.46 and one half. Up on its high, still finished the day a penny and a half lower for that September contract in the wheat pit. From the Board of Trade, December corn futures at $1.92 and three quarters the high today. The low at 191 and three quarters. Settlement price at $1.92 and a quarter. They were off a half. March futures at 206 and a half high. Low at 205.5 and a settlement price at 206.5. They were down a quarter. May contract now 215 and a quarter the high, the low at 214.5, settled at 215. They were off a half cent. And July futures at $2.22 and a quarter on the high, the low at 221.5, a settlement price at $2.22. Down one quarter for the day. September futures 230 and three quarters the high, the low at 30 and a quarter. Settlement price at 30 and a half. They were off a quarter. And next year's December futures 242 the high, the low at 41. Settlement price at $2.41 and a quarter, unchanged for the day. December oats 168 and three quarters the high, low at 164 and a half. Settled at $1.67 and a quarter, up 2.5 cents. And the March a 175 and a half high, low at 172 and three quarters. Settlement price at $1.75, up 2.25 for the March oats. Soy complex now. January soybeans, 581.5 the high, low at 573.5, a settlement price at 579.25. They were up 2.5 for the day. And the March contract had a high of 589, a low at 581 and three quarters. Settlement price for the March soybeans at $5.86 and three quarters. They were up 2. May futures were up 2 cents as well, 592 the settlement price, the high at 94 and three quarters. Settlement price at $5.92, the low at 587 and a half for that May contract. Now the July futures, they were up a 3/4 cents, 599 and a half the high, the low at 593 and a half. Settlement price for the July soybeans, $5.97 and a half cents, up 3/4 for the day. August soybeans, 601 and a half the high, the low at 599. Settlement price down a half cent for the August beans at 599 and a half, and the September's settled up a half at 597 and a half. Next year's November contract, 605 the high, the low at $6.5. Settlement price for the November beans next year at 603. They were down a half of the day. December bean meal, 175.30 on the high, the low at 172.50. A settlement price there at 174.80. They were up 140 for the day. And the January bean meal, $1.76.70 the high, the low at 176.70 the high. The low at 174, settlement price at $176.20. They were up $1.80 for the day. December bean oil, 22.38 the high, the low at 22.10, settlement price at 22.16. They were up 30. And the January futures at 22.64 on the high, the low at 22.28, settlement price for the January soybean oil at 22.34. They were down 9 for the day. Stay with us during the afternoon magazine. Coming up at 6 after the hour, the closing market report. We'll talk with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Bill Mayer from Lexington, Illinois. He'll take a look at the cash grain market. Well, of course, we'll check in with Peter Levitt, a meteorologist, and we'll hear about, on the computer subject, some training that the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences has been doing in dairy sciences. You can take dairy science classes anywhere in the world, if you'd like, right there off the World Wide website. We'll tell you more about that during this afternoon's closing market report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time. Now, here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, Todd, thank you. It was a lower day today on the Merck. One exception, November feeder cattle. That contract ended one nickel higher. November feeders, 116.55, the high, the low 116.35, the settlement 116.52.5. Again, that up 5. January, 114.35, the high 113.77.5, the low 113.85, the settlement, that down 67.5. March feeders, 112.60, the high 112, even the low, finishing at 112.15, down 65. December live cattle, 91.40, the high 90.90, the low 91.22.5, the settlement, that down 47.5. February, 94.40, the high, 93.85, the low, 94.10, the settlement, that down 52.5. December lean hog, 62.85, the high, 61.90, the low, 62.10, the settlement, that down $1. February, 66.75, the high, 65.90, the low, 66.07.5, the settlement, that down 85. April lean hog, 67.57.5, the high, 66.85, the low, the settlement, 67.17.5, down 67.5. May lean hogs, 69 even, the high, the low, 68.70, the settlement, 68.75, that down 47.5. February bellies, 88.80, the high, the low, 87.12.5, the settlement, 87.75, that down $1. The Dow is up 28 points at 10,703. The NASDAQ up 19 points at 2207. The S&P 500, 8 higher at 1239.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Even adults will be challenged from reading Wynton Marsalis's jazz poems for kids.
Oh, but couldn't he cram a century of conflict and confusion into a compelling catechism to convert charlatans?
I wanted to make it be a children's book with real big words in it.
The aural arabesques in Wynton Marsalis's new book of jazz poetry for children, Jazz ABZ, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 Central on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Daily Farms Incorporated, Arthur; First National Bank and Trust Company, Clinton; and GCOM Incorporated, Savoy. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
It's 2 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, 28 degrees in Urbana. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director today is Jason Croft, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Coming up, news from National Public Radio, the closing market report, and then later this afternoon, as the Afternoon Magazine wraps up before the 3 o'clock hour, we'll talk with award-winning food writer and cookbook author Nancy Baggett. She is an authority on baking, and her latest book is the All-American Dessert Book. She will be my guest following the closing market report today. Let's take a look at Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon.